Hi, I'm Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. There's a new book out now from Harbor Publishing called Fishing the Coast, A Life on the Water. It's a memoir on commercial fishing as told through the eyes of a commercial fisherman. Don Pepper joins me now to talk about his book. He was an economist with Fisheries and Oceans Canada, and before that he was a skiffman, a beachman, a cook, and an engineer. I'll get him to tell us just what a skiff and beachman is, as well as give us a glimpse to his life fishing, this book and more. He fished the province for herring, sardines, and salmon. He's also taught at BCIT and has a PhD from the University of Wales Institute of Technology in Cardiff. He's also served as executive director of the Canadian Pacific Sardine Association. There's an event launching this book Thursday, the 9th of May, 2013, at the Vancouver Maritime Museum. The event runs from 5:30 to 8 p.m., Visit harborpublishing.com for more information on the book and the event. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Don Pepper. Dr. Pepper, good morning.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome. You were born in British Columbia, is that right, Don?
Well, actually, no. I was born in Saskatchewan, but my parents came to Alert Bay on the coast to work at the St. Michael's Indian Residential School.
I see.
So my father was the engineer, so I lived on the reserve, and that's how I got into fishing.
Yeah.
Because Alert Bay had a cannery, a reduction plant, and lots of fishermen. So that was my start.
So that was in 53, is that right?
Well, no, 1941. I came as a boy.
I see, okay. But, yeah. but you started fishing in 53?
Yeah, I started fishing in 1953, yes.
Yeah. Well, what were you fishing back then?
Well, it was very small fishery in a curious way. We made our nets by hand because we had, you know, cotton seines and manila lines and so forth. And we fished locally. We never traveled very much. So we fished in the main thing that we started fishing was the Nimkish River sockeye, which were prized. But they got wiped out in 1957 when they sprayed with their spruce budworm. They're slowly recovering. But that was our introduction, my introduction to fishing. And the Alert Bay fishermen, that's where they traditionally start, Nimkish River sockeye.
Yeah.
And then we would go, curiously enough, that would be in May and June. And then we would, in July, the pinks, the humps would start to come, so the fleet would move to Johnson Straits or into the Broughton Archipelago.
Yeah. What is a skiffman?
A skiff. Well, you see, the way we fished was we had two men in a skiff, little dory.
Mm-hmm.
So the practice was to set the seine, and you wanted to tie it to the beach so it hold against the tide, and you could get lots of fish. So you had this little dory, two men, one to row and one the beachman. The beachman, he had the dangerous and not very nice job. He would run ashore with a beach line because. And he would tie the end of the net to a tree or a stump or a rock. And over time, fishermen have found out, you know, what we call setting spots, good spots where you could set your net and not lose it or tear it.
Mm-hmm.
But the key point was to have the end tied to the beach so you could hold the net open longer and get more fish.
Hmm. And so when you started out, I guess this would have been in the 50s, and then you worked, I guess, commercially through the 60s, is that right?
That's right, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
What was the money like back then? Is it the same as it is now?
No. Here's what I always say. You got me emotionally involved there, sorry.
Yeah.
No. The first year I fished, 1953, my crew share on the G&W was $1,493. It's burned in my brain.
Yeah.
That was enough for 1 year of university. Believe it or not.
Hmm.
Now, so nowadays, you cannot make enough money in the summer to finance a year of university. So, you know, we won't go into a consumer price index or whatever, but you could make a living. Here's my point. You could make a living from fishing alone. Lots of people could make a living from fishing alone. Nowadays, it's almost impossible.
So what do people do when fishing season isn't on?
Well, we fished for a long time in those far off days now in the dim past. We would fish from more or less the 1st of June to the middle of November. So we had the winter off. Now, if you didn't make any money fishing, you went logging.
Mm.
people that we had in the Central Coast where I live here, Alert Bay. You could work in Pioneer Timber, you could work at Inglewood, you could work in the Gippos. There were a lot of small logging operations. So fundamentally, you know, you could work all year round. But fishermen, mostly fishermen, if you had a big season, you just didn't work in the winter.
Yeah. And so what's changed? And I mean, you fished back into the 50s, and then so you've observed everything up to now.
Yeah.
Well, what's changed? I mean, has the environment done anything? Or?
Well, there's several things have changed. One is the technology. See, in the old days, we pulled by hand. So you need young, strong boys like me to work. You had, you know, it was called a power roller. If you look in the book, you'll see pictures of, you know, you pulled the net to board the net by hand. By hand. So you only made five or six sets a day. You only set the net half a dozen times. Then in the middle 60s, the periodic power block was in. So the change in technology was you just had to pile the net rather than pulling it. The key point there is before where you made six sets a day, with that system you could make 12 or 14. And so you became more efficient. And so because you became more efficient, you know, the fishing time decreased. And then finally we had the conversion into the drum seiner, which is vastly efficient. In the last boat I fished on, we made as many as 20 sets of the net in a day. So you can compare that within the 50s where we made six with 20. So you can see the change in technology. The other major change is in the amount of fish. There's less fish than there were. See, at one time there were sockeye in rivers in Smith's Inlet, lots of fish in the north, lots of pink salmon, fish everywhere. We used to even fish coho, which you never see anymore. So the stocks have slowly declined, slowly but inexorably. Now, the other thing, and I don't want to get into it too much, is the economics. You've had a consolidation of the industry where there's just one or two big firms and a bunch of very, very, very small ones. So the economics of it have changed. So you had the change in the resource, the change in the technology, and the change in the industry, how it is structured. So entirely different fishery. To repeat, you can fish salmon only 3 or 4 days in the streets now, where we used to fish 60.
So what do we do about declining stocks? I mean, can we get it up, the levels again, or not?
Well, I was involved in the salmon enhancement program where we tried to double the number of salmon.
Yeah.
It more or less didn't work out. The only thing we learned after spending $150 million was that small projects work, big ones don't. But that's beside the point. Fish are funny. People, when you ask that question, which is an obvious, intelligent question, here's what I say. I say, well, I remember in 1989, I predicted the small run of fish. Well, we fished in the West Coast on the San Juan de Fuca, and we had fabulous fishing. And then upon analysis, we found out it was the horsefly run. Well, the horsefly run was almost wiped out in 1913. So if you do your math, it was 19 four-year cycles for the 76 years for the fish to come back. To repeat, 76 years. Well, that's more than the biblical 310. So what can I say? We want the fish to come back quickly, but in terms of a species like salmon, 76 years is nothing. That's just a little blip.
Yeah.
You know, we have a similar example with sardines. We had sardine or pilchards, whatever you want to call them.
Mm-hmm.
We caught an average of 40,000 metric tons in the 30s and into the 40s. They went away for 50 years. Now they're back. Now we're catching 20 to 30,000 tons a year. So what can I say? It just takes a long time for species to recover. Very long time.
Yeah. So you went to work for DFO when? It was in the 80s?
1970.
I see.
The 80s.
I see, okay.
Yeah.
And You retired from there, what, four or five years ago?
10 years. I left there in 1980.
I see, okay.
Because I'm a West Coast boy. There's snow in Ottawa in May, you know. There's ice still in the river, I'm sure. So I said, I kept getting promoted, if I may be so bold. And I get further and further from fisheries. I guess I got homesick. So I came and taught at VCIT, which was very useful because I was in a casual employee or temporary, so I always had the summers off.
Yeah.
So I'd go salmon fishing. So so I made more money as a temporary employee than a full-time one. But, yeah, so I started fishing again in the 80s.
Yeah. We meet in this book some very interesting people. Do you want to tell us about a couple of them, the people that stand out in your memory?
Well, I fished with my longtime boyhood friend, Byron Wright, mm-hmm. who is a very successful fisherman. Unfortunately, he passed away from kidney failure. But he was a very aggressive fisherman, very aggressive. And his only excuse was that he was a minister's son. So, but he was, even though I've known him, since he was a boy, he was fascinating person because he always thought about fishing, always planned it. You know, his mantra was, preparation meets opportunity.
Mm.
And so the reason we were very successful in all the fisheries we were in is because we took a business-like approach to it. We studied the tides, we studied the runs, we had the technology, we thought it all through, and we had an attitude towards fishing, you know, that we were going to be successful regardless. And so he was very interesting from that point of view. He was very aggressive. He was not exactly a likable person to be around because fishermen are, to be successful, you had to be aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
There's a folklore story about Alert Bay. The manager in Alert Bay was asked, how do you pick a same boat skipper? He said, well, from my house in the morning, I have to walk by the school on the way to the plant. And when I look in the schoolyard and I see a big, ugly kid pounding the hell out of a little kid, that's the future skipper. So I fished with lots of guys. One of the guys I fished with for many years was Freddie Jollett, whose nickname was Fearless Fred, meaning he was fearless, and he was an intuitive fisherman, very successful, very good, lots of fun to be around, but hardworking.
Yeah.
And so I know all of them as skippers, and they were all, and each one had his own personality, and they're all different. In a sense, you become a bit of a philosopher if you're a fisherman. You have to be. And you ponder and wonder about, different approaches to being a successful fisherman. There are many.
Yeah. Did you ever fish for leisure, or was it all for business?
No, very seldom. Very seldom. What we like to do is to jig cod or jig halibut. We used to like to monkey around, dig clams.
Yeah.
But if you ask me to go sports fishing or downrigger on a boat, I'd look at you blankly, I mean, if you're going to go fishing, get $1 million boat and get going. A few fishermen do fish for leisure, but seriously, not very many. Our fun is setting a crab trap or jigging for halibut or digging clams. curious, but it's an interesting question. I never thought about it before. Yeah.
So the book ends talking about this trip you took with Byron.
Yeah.
I guess is that the last time you fished?
That's the last time I fished. Well, I've been out since then, but that was the last time I was crew share. I've been out out of Alert Bay. We have two salmon test boats that go out all summer long to test fish for salmon, so I go with them, but it's just the busman's holiday. I'm supercargo. Mm-hmm. I'm just boring the younger guys, telling them about the great run in 62 or the great sockeye run in 58,
Yeah. But this book is for not only for those guys, too, right? I mean, it's for everyone, right?
That's right. What I tried to get was to capture what it was like. Now, it's hard to do that, you know, to get that feel. I didn't get it to my satisfaction, but you get an inkling of, something was going on and something was different. And there's a statistic that sticks in my brain. At one time, there were 16,000 fishermen in B.C. Now there's 6,000. So something's happened. But my purpose was to capture that period and that time and my experiences. Really, in a way, it's not a, it seems through my eyes, but you're seeing a world that is gone and was, it was fun lots of times.
Yeah.
And it was, we were making a living, but we were doing it joyfully, if I may be so bold.
Yeah, it's just a marvelous read in that sense, because you get a sense of what this place is. And I guess the question that I'd want to know is, having traveled the coastline a great deal over the years, would you philosophize on B.C. and what this place means to you? And
well, I tell everyone we live in a fool's paradise. It's absolutely a paradise. You know, I made a living out of it for many years, and it was, and while making a living, it was not drudgery. It was exciting, to be, in Hackeye Pass early in the morning when the fog lifts, the blue Pacific, and you got your net out, and the fish are coming in, It's just rapture,
Mm-hmm.
And so I repeat, that life was gone. But we still have the coast, we still have B.C., and we can, actually you can still make a living as a fisherman. I mean, it's tougher and harder, but you can do it. And, we're lucky, we're just so lucky to have B.C. I mean, I've seen fisheries around the world and traveled and so forth, but I just say, British Columbia, my gosh, a fool's paradise, which is a bit of a critique, because, as they say about New York, if you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But in B.C., if you can't make it in New York, you can sure make it in B.C. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but there we are.
Yeah. How does a book like this come about, Don? Did you write it, and or did they come to you? How did this all...
A little of both. Prior to that, I was a writer. I wrote, a lot of fishery stuff and
mm-hmm.
did it. I went to him with another book about Alert Bay, and he said, "Well, let's do a fishing one, Don. You're the expert." No, those are his words. "You're the expert. You've
uh-huh.
done it. That's a book that will sell. And let's do it." And he said, "We'll do this one, and then we'll do the next one." Because Harbor, Howard White very well.
Yeah.
But Harbor is really pushes the BC books and stuff. I mean, sometimes say, if you write a book on the lichens and mosses of the Upper Cowichan Valley during pre-colonial times, and Howard likes it, he'll publish it. Yeah. So, it's part of a Harbor's philosophy. They're really good at it.
They are. Well, I hope this book sells well for you, Don, because it's just a great read, a charming read. Congratulations on it, and continued good luck with it.
Yeah, well, all the best. I hope we meet sometime.
Indeed. We'll make it down to the event on the 9th.
All right, then. All the best. Thanks again. I really appreciate
you. You're very welcome. The book is called Fishing the Coast, A Life on the Water. Harbor Publishing is its publisher. Don Pepper, its author, on the line from Port Hardy in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.